My name is Alex, Alex Mario, yeah, from Key Initiative Eldoret.
And can you tell us about this, what we are expecting from today?
Yeah, so today we are expecting the ruling on the criminalization clauses on the penal code of our constitution that says same-sex acts between two adults is criminalized to 14 years. Yeah, so today we are here for that and we are hoping that it's going to be good. Yeah.
Vi befinner oss i Kenias domstol för konstitutionsfrågor i Nairobi tillsammans med ett hundratal hbtq-aktivister, varav de flesta verkar känna varann sedan tidigare. Runt omkring oss hälsar folk glatt på varandra. Stämningen är hög och hoppfull eftersom just den här dagen, fredag den 22 februari 2019, kan komma att bli en historisk dag. En sån man vill kunna berätta om för sina barn och barnbarn. När som helst kommer vi nämligen att få veta om domstolen kommer att skrota de gamla brittiska koloniallagarna från 1800-talet som kan ge upp till 14 års fängelse för, citat, könsligt umgänge som går emot naturens lagar, eller om man ska översätta det mer bokstavligt, kötslig erfarenhet som strider mot naturen, vad nu det innebär. När som helst kommer vi få veta om Kenias hårda lagar mot homosexualitet strider mot konstitutionen. Den som garanterar alla kenianer rätt till jämställdhet, värdighet och ett privatliv. Plötsligt kommer domaren in och alla i rättssalen tystnar för att höra vad han säger. En kollega har varit sjuk, förklarar han, och en annan har varit på semester. Och så refererar han till den enorma mängd text de varit tvungna att läsa. Efter en stund tystnar han och återigen börjar människorna i rättssalen mumla. En kvinna bredvid oss skrattar uppgivet och skakar på huvudet. Nej, det blev ingen historisk dag den här gången heller. Rätten sköt upp i slutet till i maj med hänvisning till sjukdom, semester och att det varit så mycket dokument att läsa igenom att de inte hunnit. Besvikna och irriterade lämnar folk rättssalen och nu är det istället tröstande kramar och ord som utbyts.
We are all humans.
Steve Chemion, som rest hit för att närvara ända från USA, är besviken.
Yeah, so I came down from the States to come to have this ruling, and unfortunately we have judges who don't see the importance of the Decrim ruling. The Repeal 162 was, even if I was not in the country, I knew it was going to have an impact on the lives of my fellow Kenyan queers. So I'm trying to imagine if the judges are doing this, what can the public do to us? We are all humans, we deserve the equality that we are suffering. Discrimination, stigma, it's so heartbreaking, but we just have to put up with the situation. But we are trying to wonder, what of the fellow Kenyans who are outside? Can't they be attacked with the people, homophobic attacks? That's what I can say.
Med de gällande lagarna kan homosexuella handlingar ge upp till 14 års fängelse. De senaste 5 åren har över 500 personer gripits och lagförts. Men en eventuell lagändring skulle också innebära en signal till resten av samhället där homofobin är utbredd och ett socialt tabu och där förföljelse och attacker mot homosexuella är vanlig. De hoppfulla men nu aningen besvikna aktivisterna bestämmer sig för att åka vidare till ett av de få öppet hbtq-vänliga ställen som finns i Nairobi, The Alchemist, en slags utomhusbar där de kan samlas i fred och prata igenom dagens trista domstolsbeslut. Att vara öppet gay i Kenya är kontroversiellt. Förföljelsen av hbtq-personer är inte ovanligt, liksom utpressning och misshandel. Men även hbtq-personer som blir av med sina arbeten eller vräks från sina bostäder. Eller så kallade korrigerande våldtäkter av lesbiska. Det finns till och med fall där familjer arrangerat våldtäkt på sin egen dotter för att lära henne ha sex med män.
I'm not open gay. My mom suspects.
Steve Chemion, som hade rest hit ända från USA för att kunna närvara i domstolen den här dagen, berättar att det endast är några få i hans familj som vet om att han är homosexuell och knappt någon av hans vänner.
And I play my cards well. But I'm planning to come out to her that I'm gay.
And how do you think she will react?
She's open-minded. I know she'll feel bad at one point, but she just have to accept it.
But, I mean, with friends and everything, it's like open.
Very few of my friends knew that I'm gay.
Yeah. So, like, this community is very important for you.
It is very important because when I'm with them, I feel I'm okay. I am happy.
Do you have, like, sisters and brothers?
I only have one brother.
Yeah. Are you close?
We're very close.
Yeah.
Tight.
Does he know?
No.
No?
Yeah.
I lagtexten står egentligen ingenting som förbjuder människor att älska eller leva med någon av samma kön. Det lagen fördömer är, citat, könsligt umgänge som går emot naturens lagar. Något som rättsväsendet vanligtvis tolkar som analsex. Alltså skulle teoretiskt även en heterosexuell man och kvinna som har analsex kunna åtalas, även om det aldrig har hänt och sannolikt inte heller kommer att hända. Tidigare hade polisen rätt att tillkalla läkare som gjorde analtester på de gripna för att hitta bevis. Men sen i mars 2018 är det förbjudet, då en appellationsdomstol klassade analtest som tortyr och ett brott mot de utsattas konstitutionella rättigheter. Steves vän Alex Mario berättar om den incident för 2 år sedan som ledde fram till förbudet. 2 män blev arresterade och utsatta för en kränkande behandling där polis tillkallade läkare som skulle bevisa att de haft analsex. Ett fall som National Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission, en hbtq-organisation med jurister, drog vidare till högsta domstolen och vann.
Yeah, like 2 years ago, so two gay men were taken to the police station and they were accused of having anal sex. So there was no way the police could prove that they had anal sex. So they were forcefully taken to their medical doctor to prove that they had sex. So they were stripped naked and then things were inserted in their private parts to prove that they had anal sex. And then, so that was, they were infringing on their rights. So we went to court. And then after a year of going to court, the judge said that was unconstitutional because they were not allowed to do that. Because there's no way you can take 2 adults and they are of age and you forcefully take them to a doctor so that the doctor can prove they had sex. Yeah, so it was a victory to us.
Yeah,
we won that case.
Yeah.
Because again, if you come to the canon of knowledge, every other citizen is doing it. People are doing it, people are giving blowjobs.
Yeah.
So if you were to criminalize that and to take people to jail, you will take everyone. Even the heterosexual community.
Yeah.
It is for everyone. Canon knowledge is for everyone because it says any sexual activity that does not involve a penis penetrating a vagina.
Mm.
You know, at the moment, people are okay with us not talking about our issues. They are okay with that. But when we talk about our issues, now they protest that.
Mm.
Yeah, but people are okay with us. They say there is an issue to us. But when you talk about it, it becomes an issue.
Så länge vi är tysta och inte pratar om våra frågor så är folk okej med oss, säger Alex. Men så fort vi börjar ta upp våra frågor så protesterar de. Steve som står bredvid läser upp ett sms han just fått från en vän som är besviken över dagens domslut.
Somebody has texted me on the reaction about the Ripple judgment which has just been postponed. So his message is, hey Steve, I feel today's judgment has just brought a life to an end to me. I knew today was the day that I was going to come out to the rest of the world, and had even written down a note of what I'll post on my social media status and my family. My dear, Kenya is evil, judges are evil, our leaders are evil. The life has come to an end to me. But for the 90 days, I wouldn't stop counting, but I feel life has come to an end without no meaning. When will I ever be free from slavery and from the Eric Allies of the colonial era constitutional code. That's a very sad message.
He's depressed. You need to reach out to him. You need to reach out to him because such a person can end up committing suicide.
commit
yeah, commit suicide. Suicide. Yeah, suicide. Because now he's depressed. He feels like the world has come to an end to him. So you need to even call him, talk to him, tell him it is okay.
What are you going to answer him?
The world has come to an end to all of us, but life has to continue. Yeah, keep up the spirit. One day, equality will be given to all.
Yeah, you should even tell him, let's meet when I'm back. We can meet for coffee or a drink as we talk.
Anti-gay laws in Africa have been in the headlines a lot lately. Until very recently, Kenya had a bill before Parliament proposing foreigners caught committing homosexual acts be stoned to death while Kenyans would get a life sentence.
Homosexuals should be put to death.
And in 2011, Ugandan activist David Kato was beaten and murdered after a newspaper published his name and showed a photo identifying him as gay and calling for his execution.
The point is what they do in our country.
The crackdowns and prejudice are increasing, but so is resistance.
Även om det fortfarande är tabu och farligt att vara öppet homosexuell i Kenya, så har HBTQ-rörelsen och dess aktivister växt och blivit allt mer synliga och högljudda de senaste åren.
My name is Jim Chuchu from The Nest.
My name is Njoki Gomi from The Nest.
Jim Chuchu och Njoki Gomi är båda medlemmar i konstnärskollektivet The Nest, som ligger bakom den uppmärksammade, prisbelönta och numera även förbjudna filmen Story of Our Lives, som bygger på hundratals berättelser som de samlade in under 2 år från människor runt om i Kenya.
The film actually was part of a research project we were doing that was called Stories of Our Lives, and that we began in 2013, around the time when Uganda had introduced this anti-gay bill. And that conversation was spilling over into Kenya, because then the Kenyan politicians were like, why aren't we, if Uganda can do this, why can't we? And so for us that was a difficult period, because as queer people we were starting to wonder, okay, what happens if Kenya goes that route? Can we stay here? It was a weird time.
Remember, we were googling houses in different countries, just in case we had to pick up everything and go.
Yeah.
När Uganda kom med sina anti-gay-lagar runt 2013 blev många av oss oroliga för hur det skulle påverka situationen för oss homosexuella här i Kenya, säger Jim Chuchu. Minns du att vi till och med började googla hus i andra länder ifall vi skulle bli tvungna att fly, säger Njoki Gomi.
One of the key foundations of that argument for the anti-gay bill was that it's a Western thing and that Africans have no history of this thing, and we know that that's not true. But there wasn't really any body of evidence to support the claim that queerness exists and has existed and it exists in its own way, in a way that is really not touched by the West or informed by the West.
Yeah.
So we decided that it would be interesting to go out of Nairobi and just record stories of people, interview
people.
Yeah, queer people.
Self-identified.
Yeah, and even sometimes not.
Well, like in the sense that if we began a conversation with somebody who was having non-heterosexual sex, they were not necessarily identifying as queer, but they were telling us that their sexual interactions were queer.
Ett av de vanligaste argumenten från anti-gay-lobbyn har alltid varit att homosexualitet är ett västerländskt påfund och att afrikaner inte har någon historia av homosexualitet. Vi vet såklart att det inte är sant, men det fanns å andra sidan inte några tydliga bevis eller berättelser som kunde stödja det faktum att queerness alltid existerat på sitt eget sätt i Afrika. Så vi bestämde oss för att åka runt i Kenya och samla in berättelser från queera människor.
And we asked them such human questions about, like, when was the first time you knew you were queer? What was your first kiss like? It was like human. It was not, how old are you? Which is the kind of questioning that a lot of queer research in Africa does, because it comes from a health perspective or from a political kind of
anthropological.
Yeah. And so we came back to Nairobi with this huge archive, and we said, okay, some of the stories were like, like there were like books, there were like novels, there were like films. And so we said, how are we going to take these stories back to the community? It's fine, we can write a book, but some of these stories, like they're so, like, you can't imagine that other queer people have gone through such things. And they were not just bad things, they were also amazing things. So we decided, okay, let's shoot some short videos that kind of take a story and bring it to life.
Vi frågade dem frågor som när de förstått att de var queer, när de haft sin första kyss, den sortens mänskliga frågor som inte ställda utifrån hälsoperspektiv. Så vi kom tillbaka till Nairobi med ett gigantiskt arkiv av berättelser och funderade över hur vi skulle kunna dela med oss av dem till communityn. En del av historierna var så fantastiska så vi bestämde oss för att prova att göra en del av dem till film.
For if this film was going to show in a public, like global screening, it meant that then we had to come out as an institution and say we are the ones who've done this film. It was no longer something that we could just keep in the queer community, and it also meant that individually we all had to kind of put our personal stuff in order, which is like go home and come out, because if you don't come out, then the press are going to out you. If you're a straight member of the collective, then you have to go home and still explain that you work with this organization and that you're not queer, but you know, the whole conversation. So I remember, I think I did it, I went home and came out like, I think 3 days before we left for Toronto.
You
it
really
was crazy. And all of us kind of went home.
I wasn't able to come out then because I didn't know that I wasn't straight, but I knew that I couldn't say that. It was so confusing.
How did they react? What happened?
I think the two of us have had the most difficult family relationships. The two of us, I think our families have been really structured in their way that they want to dismantle the queerness and take it back or deny it or whatever. So that's still ongoing.
That one's not going to resolve.
What did they say when you came home?
What haven't they said? They really have said everything, and I think that's really shifted my relationship with my family, because then at some point I had to be much stronger and refuse some of the questioning and some of the intrusion, which has helped me. I don't know if it has helped my family, because then it has created even more barriers between me and them. Yeah. And for me, I think bringing a partner home, no, never.
Like,
I think
it should not even be like a named partner. Like, I think you could go home with somebody, but then you could not introduce them as a partner. No.
I think right now they'd be very terrified if they ever saw me even standing next to a man. They'd be terrified.
Yeah.
När vi väl bestämt oss för att göra en film av berättelserna blev alla vi i The Nest tvungna att komma ut inför våra familjer och vänner, säger Jim. Jag åkte hem och kom ut 3 dagar innan vi åkte med filmen till Toronto Filmfestival, säger Jim. Jag kunde inte komma ut vid den tidpunkten för jag hade inte insett att jag inte var straight då, säger Gnocchi. Att komma ut har varit svårt, säger både Jim och Gnocchi. Att komma hem med en partner skulle fortfarande vara omöjligt, säger Jim.
So what happened when the project went public? How did the public react?
Well, I guess luckily we had to be in Toronto to do the public release. So that did give us some distance from Kenya in that space of what, 5 or 6, 5, 10 days. So we went and presented the film, and it was taken really well by the public, and there was a lot of interviews, because then the other thing we learned is that then this story of Africans doing a queer thing and being brave is an archetype that fits very well into like reporting, but that's a story that's already been told many times, and so we were like a repetition of that story, but we were resisting being framed in the same way, because a lot of the questioning was,
and again,
now that you've done this thing, will you ever go back home? And so we saw that the understanding of when an African does this brave thing, he has to escape to a safe place, which is usually in Europe, America, and so the idea of us going back home was not really, they couldn't really work through that.
Som tur var vi i Toronto när filmen visades offentligt första gången, så det gav oss en viss välbehövlig distans till Kenya. Och publiken tog emot väldigt bra. Men vi insåg också genom alla intervjuer att vi blev framställda aningen stereotypt som modiga för att vi vågade prata om homosexualitet. Många frågor handlade om huruvida vi skulle våga åka tillbaka till Kenya nu när vi gjort filmen.
So there's a lot of things that we learned about the press and how they frame African
Africa.
Stories.
And how it's convenient for them to frame Africa for their audiences to feel better about their own lives.
Yeah. Because again, the other thing was that a lot of people were really interested in the violence because two of the three films in the film, they touch on the violence, and we met a lot of people who were really interested in those two in particular. And
kind of a confirmation bias.
And they're also framing the idea as Africa being very violent towards... And we were always saying, but right now, if I open the papers in America, like these are trans... The trans women are being killed in New York and all these places. Why do you feel like the violence is a different kind or like worse in one place than the other? So I think for us, not only was that... it was the first time that our work became deeply political, and that we learned that we have to take responsibility for our work, what our work does in people's lives. But it was also our first time to engage with the world as African creators and to see how there are many problematics there.
Vi lärde oss mycket om media genom intervjuerna. Bland annat att det verkade vara bekvämt för journalister att ha en bild av oss som offer för att de själva skulle må bättre. De var särskilt intresserade av våldet i våra filmer och hade lättare för att se det än de andra historierna. Men våldet mot transpersoner eller homosexuella finns ju även i väst. Det är bara att slå upp en dagstidning så kommer du hitta notiser om våld mot transpersoner eller homosexuella. När de kom tillbaka till Kenya hamnade filmen hos den statliga censuren som sa att om den skulle bli godkänd var vi tvungna att klippa bort en massa scener och särskilt slutet eftersom det var lyckligt. Ingen dog ju, säger Njoki. Och det kan ju låta galet, men om du tittar på många filmer från Hollywood som handlar om queerness så finns där ofta olycka, våld och död. Kolla bara senaste filmen om Freddie Mercury.
Basically they looked at the film. And usually they classify it within a day because it's just a group of people who just kind of sit and watch thousands of films. And then they called us and said, so we watched this thing. Now, if you want to screen, then you have to cut this part, this part, this part, this part, this part. You can't end like that. You know, you can't have a happy ending.
What was this that they wanted you to cut out? What kind of things?
I remember the one they really wanted us to cut was the end, because the end kind of affirms the queerness and says it's fine, like love is love. So they're like, no, you can't say that.
Also, there was nobody dying in our film. Like it would be fine if you had a queer person who pays for being queer.
Yeah. And you know what? Like, that might sound funny, but if you look at a lot of films out of Hollywood that involve queerness, there is death.
Yes.
And there is repercussion for
and profound
queerness.
Tragedy. There's even whatever this film about Freddie Mercury that came out just the other day was profoundly straightwashed.
Like, so you might think that it's like a thing that's like ridiculous, but like if you look at America and the way that queer stories are told,
and even though people say that yes, queer people have much more power in Hollywood these days, that they are the ones who are producers, they're making the decisions. At the end of the day, the films that are coming out still make queer people pay for being queer. There has to be a tragedy for the queerness to be public.
So the problem with this film was that it didn't do that.
No.
So we said, no, if we cut all these things out, like that's, first of all, that's going to be half a film. And like it's not the thing we made, right?
Like, yeah.
And so they said, okay, if you refuse that, then we're going to restrict the film, and that will mean that you can't show it, blah 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 blah.
You can't sell it, and you can't show it in public or in private. Yeah.
Så vi sa nej. Om vi klipper bort allt det här försvinner ju mer än halva filmen. Då sa de att om ni vägrar det måste vi förbjuda er film, vilket innebär att vi aldrig kan visa den vare sig offentligt eller privat.
So the next day they came with the policeman and they said we are looking for the producer of this film. And the producer of this film was like one of our youngest employees.
She was so young.
And so we're like no, we can't send her. So George volunteered to be arrested instead of her. And what they were arresting us for was for shooting that film without a license. So in Kenya, before you shoot a film, you get a license, and after you shoot a film, you get a classification. So we had not gotten a license because... And then they released him later that day?
Yeah.
On bail?
Yeah, after our lawyer went and had the conversation.
They released him on bail, and then there was actually a charge for shooting a film without a license.
Nästa dag kom de med polisen och frågade vem som varit producent för filmen. Men det var en av våra yngsta medarbetare, så George anmälde sig frivilligt och fick tillbringa ett dygn i arresten. Och det de arresterade oss för var att vi hade filmat utan en licens. De släppte honom dagen därpå.
And that's that story. So then most of the narratives then ended up in the book. And the book became very important because the book is like wild. The book is like the
so
film.
You made a book instead. Yeah.
Well, as well as the plan,
but now the book became much more important because it was the only thing that Kenyans would be able to interact with.
Yeah.
And so the book is crazy. The book is like the film is only like 5% of what the book is. The book is dangerous. It is like it has.
Hey, that book. Yeah,
like
they can't ban a book, or
I mean,
they don't seem to care
about like it's.
Maybe it's this thing about that people say that Kenyans don't read. There's this whole saying that if you want to hide the thing from a Kenyan, put it inside a book, because Kenyans... and it's true.
Filmen har ännu inte visats i Kenya. Så det vi gjorde var att göra en bok av alla berättelserna. Och den blev viktig, för där fick alla berättelserna plats. Och boken är vild. Filmen är bara 5% av boken. Och de kan inte förbjuda en bok, frågar jag. Nej. Det finns ett ordspråk som säger att om du vill gömma något för en kenyan så skriv det i en bok, säger Jim, och skrattar. Nej, än så länge har Stories of Our Lives inte visats i Kenya. Däremot har den visats på en rad filmfestivaler världen över och även prisbelönats. Bland annat 2015 då den fick pris på Teddy Awards, Berlins filmfestivals officiella queerpris.
The jury award goes to Stories of Our Lives. And who's the director? It's directed by Jimmy Chuchu. Jimmy Chuchu, welcome on stage.
I guess I should say thank you to, first of all, to all the people who gave us the stories. So I want to say thanks to them. I'm sad that they don't get to see the film. God. I want to say thank you to the Nest Collective, who we made the film together with. They're my family. And to Njoki and Steven and everyone at the Big World Cinema, thank you all very much for having us here.
I fredags den 24 maj, någon vecka innan det här programmet blev klart, meddelade Kenyas domstol för konstitutionsfrågor att homosexualitet kommer fortsätta vara olagligt i Kenya. Det betyder att Steve, Alex, Jim och Njoki, som ni hört i det här programmet, tillsammans med alla andra homosexuella i Kenya, riskerar upp till 14 års fängelse på grund av sin kärlek. Det gör att homosexualitet är olagligt i 36 av 54 afrikanska länder. Du har lyssnat på RFSU-dokumentär med mig, Maria Sveland. Och det här var del 3 av 4 i en serie om sexuella och reproduktiva rättigheter i Kenya. Tekniker var Christer Orteg från produktionsbolaget Filt Hinterland. Tycker du precis som oss att de sexuella och reproduktiva rättigheterna är livsviktiga? Att alla människor har rätt att vara, välja, njuta och att dessa frågor ständigt behöver lyftas. I så fall får du gärna hjälpa oss att sprida vår podd.